Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, Deputy Director Joe Storr. My name's John Long. I'm with the Fish Program. And I thought I'd start out this morning by telling a little story. I just recently returned from Disneyland. And as you know, that's purported to be the happiest place on earth. But I'm here to talk to you about North of Falcon. So I'm here to give you a briefing on the North of Falcon policy. As you know, it's a two-year policy, and it's in place through the end of this year. It's already been adopted, and so not asking for any action items today, but willing to and ready to accept input from the Commission on the preseason planning process this year. Let's start by just briefing you on some of the history and some of the elements that you find in the North of Falcon policy. Hopefully in your binder you have gotten a copy of the policy itself as well as the presentation that I'll be reading from. It may help you to kind of walk through the policy if you do have it as we go through. I'm kind of going through it in chronological order. So, as you know, this is the Fish and Wildlife Commission's guidance for the department as we seek to set annual salmon season. And it contains a bunch of different elements, things about conservation and harvest opportunities, how we manage in season, how we monitor and sample and enforce the fisheries, things about gear conflicts and incidental mortalities, and how we communicate with you and the public. That's all nested into this one in this one policy document. So one of the major things that you've told us in this policy is that we are to be cognizant of all of the things that we're all of the different interplays between all of these different types of management plans and case laws, statutory authorities, and a number of Fish and Wildlife Commission policies as well. This is an umbrella policy for a number of policies, not least of which we'll mention some of them, but things like the Willapa Bay policy, Grays Harbor policy, Columbia River policy that I believe you're going to be getting a briefing on tomorrow. So this is an umbrella policy that references all of those other policies and that we're supposed to be mindful as we make our way through the planning process to consider what guidance is given in those policies. So if you step into the document a little bit further into the preamble, we are a science-based agency, and we are using science to guide our activities. And in so doing, we want our plan to be consistent with a science-based, well-documented, transparent, well-communicated, and accountable, as is described in our 21st Century Salmon and Steelhead Initiative. And we, of course, want to meet or exceed our Endangered Species Act recovery and conservation goals. If you look a little further into the document, it's kind of arranged in first a general and statewide kind of direction, and then we'll get down to some specific species direction. So in the general and statewide, the direction is that we're to target healthy and wild hatchery stocks, and so try and keep off of things that aren't healthy, that things that aren't able to withstand any harvest, and that we're to be using the Smart Selective Fishery tool that you've no doubt heard a lot about. We're to use that to maximize fishing opportunity and minimize impacts to those depressed stocks. And we're also supposed to be mindful of that we're not exclusively reserving opportunities for either sport or commercial. We're supposed to consider both sides of that as part of the mandate of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Then under the fishery management, harvest management section, a little more on general and statewide, that we're supposed to provide meaningful recreational fishing opportunities. Recreational fishing opportunities are a little different than commercial opportunities. Those are economic driven. That's not to say that recreational fisheries don't have an economic value to the state. They most certainly do. But it tends to focus more on opportunity. People really want to get out and enjoy fishing and enjoy the seasons that are set. The other thing is that we want to distribute those opportunities for recreational fishing equitably across fishing areas. I'll come back to this in just a little bit. And we want to make sure that we're reflecting the diverse interest of various fishers. We've got a very diverse group of fishers, anglers out there, and it includes everything from catch-and-release type fisheries, fly fisheries, bait fisheries, all kinds of those. We want to make sure that we're addressing and giving opportunity to the various sectors that are out there. This, a little further in here, is on very bottom of page one. This is kind of a relic, but it's an important relic, and we don't want to get rid of this relic. This is where it talks about non-treaty fishing access of unutilized portions of treaty harvest allocation. So what does that mean? That basically, the direction there is, if there were unutilized portions of a tribal allocation of a fishery, a species, and historically it used to be chum. I think that's where this came from. Back in the day, there was unutilized chum that were in that weren't being utilized by the tribal fisheries, and so the direction was, hey, if you can get access to those and they're not being used, please do so. And so, it's like I said, a relic of a day gone by. However, it's important guidance to say, if those kind of opportunities exist again in the future, to please consider ways of gaining access to those, either in in-season agreements or pre-season agreements. A little further in on the next page, you'll notice that we talk a little bit about specific species. And so now it's not just general statewide kind of approach. We're talking about specific species in Puget Sound, for example. Sockeye, chum, and pink salmon have a priority for the majority of the harvest for commercial fishers. And then number two, provide meaningful recreational opportunities as well. So for sockeye, chum, and pink salmon, they have a priority for commercial fishers. And the one exception to that is Puget Sound origin sockeye. So in other words, Lake Washington sockeye. Those are prioritized primarily for recreational, although there is a beyond a certain threshold that we haven't seen in a number of years, there is opportunity for commercial as well. Contrast that with the direction about Chinook and coho salmon in Puget Sound. So in priority order for Chinook and coho salmon, we're to provide meaningful recreational opportunities first, and again, to distribute those equitably across fishing areas. And then number two, to provide opportunities for commercial harvest. So Chinook and coho salmon have the priority for recreational fisheries in Puget Sound. And maybe I'll just stop here briefly on the distributed equitably across fishing areas. So there's a mosaic, as you know, across the state of various fishing areas. If you think about Puget Sound being areas 5 through 13, we want to make sure that we're providing opportunity for all of those areas where we can. And this is important. You'll probably hear and may have already heard that last year's agreements, some folks would suggest that those don't represent an equitable distribution of Chinook fishing opportunity given reductions that we experienced in areas 9 and 10. So you may hear some folks raise that concern that we did not in last year's fisheries and that last year's package distribute equitably across all the areas. So I just want you to be aware of that. Then there's some direction a little further down on that second page that talks about various regional areas, Grays Harbor, Willapa Bay, and the Columbia and the Pacific Ocean, all those have, well, I guess three of them have policies that you have adopted in recent years. Grace Harbor is 3621. We're to be consistent with that policy. Willapa Bay is 3622. We're to be consistent with those policies and directions that are outlined there. The Pacific Ocean, where there's the Pacific Fishery Management Framework Plan, and we're obviously very cognizant of that and wanting to use the framework plan to identify and plan our seasons and in that document. And then we talked a little bit, just a little bit ago, about the Columbia River. That's policy 3620, and again, you're going to get a much more detailed briefing on that, I believe, tomorrow. But another thing to note about the Columbia River policy is the fact that the state of Oregon has an interest in these fisheries as well. And so we want to make sure that we're coordinating our fishery planning efforts with the folks from ODF&W. Well, if there's one thing that's certain about planning fisheries, it's that nothing ever turns out perfectly, and so we end up changing things in season. And so that part on, I believe it's on page, it's this, it's still the second page, is it? Yeah, about two-thirds of the way down on the second page, you'll see the in-season management section. And this is reminding us that we want to make sure that as we change things in season, as sometimes is necessary, but we want to make sure that we're meeting our harvest management objectives and our fishery intent that we developed as we went through the North of Falcon process. So in other words, we want to make sure that we're why did we make those decisions? Why did the way we did in the preseason planning process, make sure that we're using those same intent, that same logic to apply to in-season changes that are sometimes necessary. And that's important to be communicating those things with the appropriate commercial and recreational representatives and how we make our decisions and making sure that we maintain that intent as we go through the season. Near the bottom of that page, you'll also see direction about the importance of monitoring and sampling and enforcement. Without that critical information to monitor in season and in future seasons, we'd be in a lot of trouble. So you've directed that fishery participants are to comply with monitoring and sampling and enforcement efforts, and that all this is so that we can provide an accurate account for species and population impacts in all the fisheries that we're managing. And I believe on the last page of the policy, you'll see a gear and fishery conflict heading. We're, of course, wanting to try and minimize gear and other fishery conflicts as they occur. There's all kinds of, that can occur between recreational fisheries or between recreational and commercial fisheries or state and tribal fisheries. We're trying to figure out ways to minimize those conflicts as they arise, and we want to resolve those by involving the appropriate constituents, either from the sport or commercial representatives, as we go through ways to resolve those sorts of conflicts. Also, seabirds can be a really a big factor. We've got the Migratory Bird Act that we want to make sure that we're managing consistent with. And so we want to try and minimize our mortalities on non-target species. Seabirds, one example. Other finfish species like rockfish is another example. So implementing strategies to minimize our impacts for incidental mortalities is very important and a key piece of the direction that you have provided us. And then under the section for communications, no process, or at least I haven't seen a process that's perfect yet, and so it's continually striving to improve the process itself, how we communicate the process, how people are able to access decisions that are made in the process, access representatives so that they can provide input to the process. And so we're continually trying to find ways to implement better communication processes. We've been using and improving our website, for example, and a whole bunch of variety of communication tools, everything from news releases to that website to public meetings, and there's a series of meetings. And just to be clear on that, the final PFMC meeting is scheduled for April 14th. So it's about 3 months of a dead run for the fishery staff as we go down this path to plan the season. And then lastly, you'll notice that the delegation of authority on page 3, this is where the commission assigns the director to make agreements with the tribes and other government agencies and to adopt permanent and emergency regulations from those agreements that result from North of Falcon. And so that's kind of in a nutshell what the North of Falcon policy is about. Be glad to entertain any questions that you might have or any input that you'd want to provide us.
Thank you, John. It wasn't that much different than Disney World.
Yeah, it's very, very similar.
Questions, John? Mr. Grable.
How long has this process been in place, and have you seen any alteration in the process over that period?
So the process, I believe, is 28, 29 years old, something like that. I think I've been through, I think this will be my 17th. So yeah, there have been changes in the process, mostly at the communication strategy level. How do you involve, how do you maximize public involvement so that people have a voice to help you craft those fisheries? And so that's one of the things we've added a number of meetings over the years. Okay. One example of that might be the North of Falcon meetings that have occurred on the east side for the last 4 or 5 years. Those never used to occur when I first started. And so trying to figure out ways to provide input to the department as they're going through the preseason process, yeah, there have been a number of changes made there, and I'm sure that there will be a number made as we go into the future.
All right. Thanks.
Any further questions? I guess. Oh, yes.
I have to ask, we just received a letter from Bob Turner,
yeah,
of NOAA, on the subject of North of Falcon.
Yes.
I know you're not prepared to go into a full analysis of the thrust of that letter, but do you have any initial thoughts? How are we reacting to that letter, and what do we see as its motivation?
I think the letter, thanks for the question. I'm not prepared to answer in great detail, but my initial blush was, the NOAA is providing input and some suggestions to us that, hey, there's a high importance, high value to agreements. Mm-hmm. And I see that as for two reasons. Well, there's a lot of value to the relationship if you can, between all the parties, if you can do so, if you can plan fisheries and prosecute fisheries with agreements. That's high value, no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. I also think that it probably makes their life a lot easier if we have agreement as well, meaning NOAA that they have a job to do as well, and so they're trying to encourage the co-managers to find ways forward to come up with agreements. And so that's my initial take is I wouldn't say that it was ominous in any way. I took it more as an encouragement rather than a wagging of the finger, if you will.
It did include what seemed to me a surprising assessment of the overall outcome of fisheries in the past, in that it seemed to point to the non-Indian, non-treaty side getting more of the harvest. And that just was counter to what I understood was happening in recent years. So why is their picture of this so different from ours?
Thanks. Well, the way I took that, the way I read it, that there were, they identified three stocks that the non-treaty fleet had enjoyed a higher than 50% harvest rate, or higher than 50% sharing, I guess I would say. And so that it seems to me that only three out of a number of stocks, there's quite a few more stocks than just those three, that seems to me that it's it wasn't necessarily saying that we got we the non-treaty fleet got a lot more than the tribes did. That's not how I read that. And in fact, it was saying I took it like, wow, only three. That's not an insurmountable landscape to navigate whenever planning fisheries. If you were trying to reach 50-50, there are three stocks that we have had a higher impact than the tribes. That seems like not nearly as big a number as one might expect.
And I think it's fair to say, like a comment, if you look at the aggregate, it tells a totally different story.
Oh, absolutely.
In the other direction.
Absolutely, you're correct. And so I think they were just identifying that there were three, that NOAA was identifying that there were indeed three stocks where it was higher.
On that point, one of them was Hood Canal, recreational. Another one was Bellingham Sandwich Bay, non-tribal commercial. And what's the third one?
Was it Puyallup? Yeah, Puyallup.
In-river fishery or in?
Total.
Total?
Okay. Sorry, Chair. I came up just in case John got stuck. He did a great job, so I'm just going
to your moral support's right next to you.
I can feel the love.
Yeah. It's the happiest place on earth.
It is.
I'm going to Disney.
So to follow up as a new commission member on Commissioner Wecker's question, I saw the letter and went, so do we always get this letter to kick off the process? Or, do you want to speculate on why we got the letter?
You want to speculate?
That's an easy one.
Sure.
Chair Smith, Commissioner, I think that NOAA did a really nice job in trying to share the detail. Last year was a year of inside-outside conflict between our recreational sectors, and I believe that they not only wrote the letter to the co-managers, but offered the general community of fishers that participate in our fisheries a wealth of knowledge of how the fisheries are conducted and the constraints as well as the approval processes and what's going to be looked at to approve those fisheries. And I think it was a well-written letter, and take it at that vein, and it'll provide us a good foundation moving into the season this year.
Thank you. Further questions, comments?
I just have to, since you opened the door to a little bit further questioning on your interpretation, did it appear to you that it was a signal to both sides that if both cannot agree, that neither side will fish?
I don't know if it says that, Commissioner, but I did take it like that it was strong, encouraging language to both the non-tribal and tribal sides, the co-managers, to reach agreement, and that failure to do so could could risk could put everyone's fisheries at risk, both sides of that equation.
Both sides, not just our side.
Yeah, that's how I read it.
Okay. Director?
Yeah, I just if we have time, and I don't want to get ahead of commissioner's questions, but if maybe one or the other of you could talk about what we've done this year that's maybe a little bit different than last year, and just trying to get ahead of some of the issues and maybe our plans to meet with some of the recreational fishermen and others.
So thanks for the question. There have been a number of things that we've been working on in the off season. We've been meeting with tribal co-managers in some of the key constraining stock areas every month or so over the summer. We've been meeting with the Muckleshoot tribe, for example, on Lake Washington issues and developing a kind of an urban type management plan that's if nothing else, it helps build a relationship there. And so that's a key improvement. We've also been talking with recreational stakeholders in a variety of forums, including our advisory groups. We have new folks on the advisory group as well. We've got a meeting scheduled next week with that advisory group to try and work on developing some proposals, some very specific proposals. A number of things have been taking place in the past few months, and so I think we're poised to go into this process with putting our best foot forward.
Commissioner Carpenter.
The letter that was addressed to Lorraine Loomis and Director Unsworth, I assume that went to the AG's office?
Yes, it did.
At what point in time will we be able to get a report back from the AG's office as far as their read on that?
Commissioner Carpenter, thank you for the question. I hope to talk to AG's office early next week to get their read on the letter and any insights they may have, as they're in pretty constant contact with their counterparts in the Department of Justice. I know that NOAA is under continued focus and scrutiny on all of the things that they do with a legal backdrop, and I think that the letter was, again, a foundation of how they're going to do things to let people know what and how the year will play out. And I haven't had a chance to talk to the AG, but I'd love to call individual commissioners who are of interest after I do to let them know what the AG's office have provided us in their thoughts.
Perhaps we could even have a conference call.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Okay. Director?
Mr. Chairman, also the letter talks about sharing it broadly, and I've already started doing that. I've sent it to lots of different folks, and I would encourage you to share it with recreational commercial fishermen and your tribal people that you work with. And I found it pretty educational for me on some levels, and I'm kind of curious to see what the take is by several people, including the commission at some point.
And we have begun distributing that per your direction to a variety of recreational groups, and I'm starting to receive some feedback on that. Yeah, good point.
Have we finished that then? Gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.